This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. In studio, two guys who have played football at the highest levels of combat, Rohan Davey and Ken Ellis, one from LSU, the other from Southern. Rohan set almost all of the single-season passing records at LSU and leading the Tigers to the SEC title in 2001 under Nick Lou Saban. And Ken Ellis played for Southern University back in the heyday, 1966 to 69. Two of his teammates are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Harold Carmichael and Mel Blount. He was an All-Pro for 2 years himself in a 10-year career with the Green Bay Packers, and he was on a team that had some great players in addition to the ones I mentioned, one in particular, the great linebacker, Isaiah Robertson. All of this is relevant because LSU and Southern play tomorrow night for the first time, long overdue, and for those who believe in culture and in symbols, think about how the world is responding to the death of the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, 70 years on the throne. Now, this is something that is important to our community. In Baton Rouge, this is huge, as it should be, and tomorrow night there will be quite a spectacle at Tiger Stadium. And Rohan Davey, you're from Miami, Florida, but I think you have become aware over the last 20 years how significant this is.
This is the biggest deal, in my opinion, that's happened here with LSU football recently. That's all everyone is talking about. That's all the community, and not just Baton Rouge. I mean, it's talked about outside of here. And one of the questions is, why is it happening for the first time now? And to me, that really doesn't matter. What matters is it's happening now and what it's going to do for the community, and especially for Southern University and with your brethren right down the field. I remember when I was at LSU, every Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever our off day was, the first place we used to go was Southern University. Because we had guys that we knew over there that either transferred from LSU and went over there, or they had good-looking girls. So we're going over there for that. You know, so it was all that intermingling. And honestly, me coming from Miami, and the culture I was coming from was more of a culture like Southern University, but I was at LSU. So you go there also for that fact, for the culture that wasn't at LSU at the time. So it's huge, man. I have a sister that from Miami that went to Southern University and is flying in today at 11 just for this game. You know, took time off of work just to come in. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Rohan Davey, who also has two Super Bowl rings from his years with the New England Patriots. He was a quarterback on the team with another pretty good quarterback in Tom Brady.
Pretty good.
But now, Ken Ellis, you were at Southern 66 to 69. And in 1969, Charlie McClendon had his greatest season at LSU. His team probably would have won the national title had Ole Miss and Archie Manning not upset them. 26-23 in Jackson, coming back with two late touchdowns. But that Southern team, as I mentioned, had two Hall of Famers in pro football. They had you, had Isaiah, and LSU, and six other players who played in the NFL, and most for many years. And LSU had three players on its team who played in the NFL. So the roster was stacked. But now, a lot of those players do come to LSU, and because of that, Southern doesn't get the talent it used to get because many of those great black athletes are playing at major colleges where they couldn't play in the 1960s. You came from Georgia.
Yes, sir.
To come to Southern. Why did you come to Southern University?
As Rohan alluded to, and back then, my visit to Southern University's campus was by way of going through the yearbook at Southern University when the coach from Southern came to my high school campus recruiting me. I remember I can't remember what class I was sitting in, but I got a call to come to the office, and I thought to myself, what have I done now? And when I got to the office, there was Coach Robert Smith, sitting there, and he was saying that he wanted me to come to play football at Southern University. And I hadn't heard anything about Southern University, didn't know much about anything about Southern University, really. To be honest with you, I was planning on possibly staying in-state in Georgia and going somewhere, you know, or going to Florida A&M in Tallahassee. But I remember he brought a college yearbook with him, and I began to thumb through that yearbook, and I saw all those good-looking girls. And I said, where do you want me to sign at?
Of course, is a great university. Unfortunately, most people in Baton Rouge have never been to the Southern campus. Beautiful campus, right on the bluff, and yes. It's noted for that. And as you stated, beautiful women, and the Dancing Dolls were around even then. In fact, I think Isaac Reggs was running the band then, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yes, yeah. He was.
Yeah, a world-famous band. LSU has great a great band, too. But LSU, of course, plays more more selections from yesteryear. A lot of show tunes. The Southern
That's
band.
That's a good way to put it.
Southern band's
the
about.
The human jukebox.
Yeah. It's going to rock Tiger Stadium.
Man. Hey, let me tell you something. Tiger Stadium, I mean, we're in for a treat, baby. We're in for a big treat now. I was, you know, being that it was the first time they've ever been in there, I was hearing there's some talks of a collaboration, but I'm going to tell you, me personally, I love to see the human jukebox, just the whole show, you know, just the whole show, baby. It's going to be wonderful.
Well, I hope the halftime show is about 2 hours long.
Yeah. That's right. Has to be extended anyway. Has to be extended.
But for 1 year, back when ABC had the rights to college football, they selected the best band in college football, and it was LSU. That's 51 years ago. But I remember Doc Severinsen made the presentation. And the LSU band, of course, has produced some great people, one of whom comes on this show about once every year or two, Bill Conti. And it is an underrated band, I think in many cases underappreciated, and the band's only going to play what it's told to play. I hope they jazz it up tomorrow night.
Well, this is the thing. You kind of have to. When you see Southern on the schedule and you know what they're bringing, it's almost like when you play Alabama and they're coming in there. You know you got to be on your P's and Q's and everything got to be ready. You got to pick your game up, baby.
And, Ken, I've covered football games in the SWAC, and it's not just the Southern band. They're all good.
Yeah. They're all good.
They're all good. And there's a big battle at halftime on who gets supremacy.
The battle of the bands, and they pride themselves on that, and they take great length, go to great length to put a good show on the field.
Well, I talked to a prominent African-American person in this community a few days ago, and he said he was concerned that Southern will be so mismatched that some players could get hurt. And we had a tragedy at Georgia a few years ago. On the field, it's probably not going to be a close game. And there could be injuries, as there always are. Look at LSU lost its best player last week when he was jumping out and down celebrating. Right. Those things happen in football.
Yes.
But is the matchup so lopsided that Southern may end up having 10 or 20 guys go out of there on a stretcher?
I don't think so, and I pray that it doesn't happen. But, you know, it's football. It's a collision sport, and you're going to have injuries, like you said. And so I think that the players are aware of what they're involved in, and they'll be ready to play, and the coaches will have them ready to play. And the best team is going to win. You know, whoever makes the least mistakes and turn the ball over and score more points is going to win. But I don't think you have to really. If you go out there concerned about injuries, you're gonna probably have injuries. So you have to go out there. You prepared yourself. That's why you worked throughout the off season in the summer in the weight room and nutrition and things of that nature to get yourself ready to play a contact sport, a collision sport. Yeah. And so you're gonna have injuries, but you can't go out there thinking about it, because if you do, you're not gonna be at your best.
And the times have changed on the field. Both teams will have about 90% of their players on the field who are African-American. Southern does have a white kicker. The greatest irony would be if Southern won the game on a field goal from a white kicker. Wouldn't that be something? But it probably will not be close. But nonetheless, I suspect Southern will put up a fight. And, Rohan, we've seen it. Sometimes it's a lot closer than anticipated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was part of, I think it was UAB my year UAB
2000,
came in,
yeah,
beat came Saban. In and beat us, yeah, in Tiger Stadium. So it's not impossible. I'm going to be on the other side that said it won't be that close of a football game. But you're going to have Southern University come in there. You're going to have those coaches, have those guys, like Coach said, prepared to play football. They're going to come in with some things that you've never seen. They're going to come in with some trick plays. They're going to come in with some with a bunch of things.
We're going to take a short pause and return with Rohan Davey and Ken Ellis. Your number 877-217-5757. We start with Donna in Mid-City after this. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing a few more minutes with Rohan Davey, LSU quarterback of renown. As stated before Joe Burrow, he had all the single-season records from 2001. And I must give him credit. When Burrow was breaking all his records, he said records are made to be broken.
That's right.
Nobody rooted harder for LSU in 2019 than did Rohan Davey.
That's right. Records are meant to be broken and couldn't have been done by a better guy. I mean, not just football player, but a very tenacious competitor on both sides and also a good person. So couldn't have been done by a better guy, a better year. And if there's a time to do it, it was what they did that year. So,
but since then, LSU is 11-13 in football. Unbelievable collapse. And that's what it is, a collapse.
Yeah.
And LSU will try to get its ship righted under Brian Kelly, and quite likely his first win will come against Southern. And yesterday, Virg Osbury made it official that LSU next year will play Grambling.
Yes.
So that's good. Now, Ken Ellis, the last, I guess, 13 years or so, has been a chaplain at the sheriff's office, and he's a man of God, and he's about to turn 75 years old. And a lot of these guys who play defense have real issues from their days in professional and college football, and the helmets, as we know, were primitive. But you seem to have your wits.
Well, to God be the glory.
That's right.
But I did have my share of injuries. People ask me all the time, you know, how, did you ever get injured? I said, how many times? And like you said, I look at those helmets that we had, those old suspension Rydell helmets. It's no wonder we're not brain dead.
I know. And some, of course, are.
Yes. Yes.
877-217-5757. Donna in Mid-City. Donna, you're on with Rohan and Ken.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering what determines the start of a game. I understand that Saturday night's game begins at 6:39.
Television.
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 Generally, yeah. They try to accommodate the media, and they get big money for TV and radio and other rights, all those signs you see in the stadium, the game programs. You know, LSU only prints, I think, about 5,000 of those game programs, but they've contacted me in the past to advertise in them, and I don't do it because they only print about 5,000, but they make the claim that you can get your company before 100,000 people in Tiger Stadium, and technically that's right, but come on. But they make lots of money off coaches' shows. It is a walking cash register out there. And Ken Ellis, who would have thought when you were playing in 1969 at Southern that coaches would be making $250,000 a week?
My, is that what they make?
That's what Brian Kelly makes.
Oh, my goodness. It's amazing. But, you know, I'm not mad at them. If somebody's willing to pay me that kind of money, I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
Dr. Bandela, do we have Dr. Bandela in Scotlandville? Hello, Dr. Bandela. You're on with Ken and Rohan.
Yes, good morning, Jim. My question is this. I know you earlier spoke about the HBCUs being overmatched in most of the games, and I was wondering from your guests, what's their take on Sanders coaching Jackson State? Would that bring in, do you think that would encourage more elite professionals to enter the coaching in the HBCU, and would it increase participation from outstanding players?
Well, I think Deion being at Jackson State and doing what he's doing has been a blessing for all HBCUs. He's brought attention to HBCUs like never before, and he's attracting not only sponsorships and the monies coming in, but attracting also quality players to HBCUs.
Now, Deion, he brought in the top player in the country, didn't he?
Yeah, Travis Hunter.
Yeah.
And, you know, what he, to piggyback what Pastor Ellis said, what he started with the notoriety and using his platform and his name to bring in the guys like Jason Strahan with the suits and having changing the locker room and things of that nature. And I recently know that he just brought on a white quarterback to compete with his son. And the reason the guy came on and he's been shunned, it was a 5-star recruit out of Texas. And he used the N-word in a setting and been shunned and got brought to Deion, and Deion basically cleaned the slate and gave him an opportunity. But I think that him starting that, I know we have some basketball coaches also that's in the HBCU that started, but I think that it has to be a thing where it transforms and it goes through. And the other thing is they got to win.
Yeah.
They got to win.
Well, I think they will win, and Deion will be coveted by other schools. Wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back at his
alma mater. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's great for the SWAC. And Jackson State gave us some pretty good players. Walter Payton, most prominently. And you played with some of the greatest players in the history of football when you were in college, Ken Ellis. And
that's amazing.
It's funny, a listener noted that they thought Blunt Road was named after Mel Blunt. Well, it's like some people think O'Neal Lane's named after Shaquille O'Neal, No. But Mel Blunt was pretty good, wasn't he?
He was pretty good. Believe it or not, I think when he came to Southern, he came as a wide receiver, I believe.
Well, he did okay playing.
He did okay.
Well, thanks, guys, and let's keep this going. You both are delightful, and glad you're in our community. These guys went off and made history in other parts of the country and came back home to Baton Rouge and adopted homes for both of them, Rohan from Miami and Ken from Georgia.
Yes, sir.
See you soon. And before we get to our next guest, Sharon Broom and Chancellor Skidmore, John Kennedy, our junior U.S. senator, had some comments to make about the national anthem. He gets hot and bothered, Senator Kennedy does, when people don't salute the flag. Here's John Neely Kennedy.
Most Americans used to respect the flag. They put their hand over their heart. They take their hat off to show respect. Now the woke mob wants to end all that. They think that loving our flag is silly. Some of them even think it's racist. Here is a hard truth. Arlington National Cemetery contains 400,000 reasons why you should stand your ass up for the national anthem.
All right, that's John Kennedy fired up about not standing for the anthem. And here is Rudy Macklin, the great LSU basketball player who played in the league and stood for the anthem every time he was asked to, he wasn't even going to have to be asked. He did it himself. But here's Rudy commenting on Senator Kennedy.
You know, John Kennedy, he's a little different, okay? And he's one French fry short of a Happy Meal, I guess.
That's Rudy Macklin. And let's get Sarah Broom and Chancellor Skidmore in the studio to talk about their observation of the matchup tomorrow in Tiger Stadium, LSU and Southern University. It is historic. It's a long time coming. And good morning, guests. Both dressed quite brightly today, yes. Chancellor and Sarah. And Sarah is a prominent lawyer. She is the first daughter of Baton Rouge. And Chancellor, he was in the human jukebox.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. How was that?
It was amazing. It was a great learning opportunity. I was under Dr. Isaac Griggs. And also at that time, like, Dr. Alvin Batiste was over the jazz program. So it was a great time to be a musician, studying music at Southern at the time. So much talent there.
You're going to be there tomorrow night?
No, I don't attend any sporting events. Really? I never followed sports. Even when I was in the band, I'd only like perk up when it was halftime.
Well, the halftime show will probably be the highlight. But Sarah has degrees from both universities. Is there divided loyalty?
No, loyal to both. There's no division. We don't believe in division in the Broom household.
So who do you root for tomorrow night?
I'm excited for both teams. I really am. I'm excited for the city of Baton Rouge, too.
And I've been to Tiger Stadium, and I've been to, I'd say, 95% of the games since 1977. That's 45 years, so we're talking about a lot of games, probably 300 games I've been in that stadium. And most times the field now, 85% of the players for LSU are black and about 95% of the fans are white. Tomorrow night, probably at about half of the stands will be African-American. And I think that's wonderful. It will be a big change, long overdue, and it is going to be quite a spectacle for our city. And we'll talk more with Sarah and Chancellor after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. And Robin Dow is producing. A reminder that podcasts are available day and night, 24 hours. If you'd like to go anytime, any time you prefer, you can go to WRKF.org or TalkLouisiana.org. In studio, Sarah Broom, now prominent attorney, graduate of both LSU and Southern, the first daughter of Marvin and Sharon Weston Broom, and Chancellor Skidmore, who is a part of the Human Jukebox, a protege of one Isaac Greggs. He played the trombone when he's at Southern. Now he's a percussion guy with the Michael Foster Project. Great musician, and credits Southern University for his development. And both schools have great schools of music, different approaches. But tomorrow night, the two bands will converge on the field. That may be the biggest part of the evening, but there is a football game. And I don't know why, based on all this enthusiasm, Sarah, why this hasn't happened before, but it's finally here. We're glad for that, but they should have been playing long ago and far away.
Yeah, I think the proof is in the pudding when we see, all of the positive buzz that's going on in the city. Definitely a historical event. I'm glad that it's going to happen again. I think it should continue. It just goes to show, I really think that there are a lot of ties. Mm-hmm. To both schools, and there are a lot of families who have ties to both schools, much like my family does. And so I think that goes to show mm-hmm. how unified the city has become over the last 10 to 20 years.
And your affiliation with LSU, you've been on that campus for a lot of years, haven't you?
I sure have. I started there in high school. My kids go to school there now at the lab school mm-hmm. and went on to attain my undergraduate degree there in business law, and then was really privileged to complete my law degree at Southern University Law Center.
Which is probably the most diverse school in America.
Absolutely it is. They've been ranked number one for that, and I credit them with any success that I have in this legal field going forward, because they gave me such a strong foundation. They welcomed me with open arms. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of non-traditional and traditional students who go on to do so many great things out of that program. And I'm grateful to Chancellor John Pierre and his wonderful administration for allowing me to study there.
And when you were at the lab school, probably didn't have a lot of people who looked like you.
No, not at the time. But I think that even on LSU, we've seen a lot of wonderful strides in that regard. We have now Unity Field on LSU campus is what it's called now, I think. And at the lab school, when my daughter was in high school, she and her friends established the first black student union at LSU lab school. And so, and that was done, with a welcome sponsorship mm-hmm. of the faculty there at the school, as well as the administration at LSU. And so I'm excited to see how the changes are happening across the city.
Well, it's a sea change in our community. It's happened over the course of the last couple of generations. I remember having Maxine Crump on this show. She was the first black female at a dorm at LSU. That was 1964.
Wow.
Kenny Ellis, who played football at Southern, who was just with us, he was there 66 to 69. There were no blacks on the LSU team then, none. He couldn't have gone to LSU if he wanted to. Mm. And now, as mentioned, the team is about 85% black.
Yeah.
And the coaches are mostly white. And the fans at LSU, if you go to the suites, it'll be almost all white folks. But tomorrow night in the stands, you're going to see a lot of people you don't normally see, and that is great. And it is a wonderful development for our city. I wouldn't mind if they played every year, but Chancellor, I know you're not a big football fan, but I'm sure you're aware of the cultural significance of this.
Oh yeah. I think that it's an opportunity for everybody to come together and have some fun. I don't think the game is going to affect anyone's rankings or anything like that. And so I think this is just a good opportunity mm-hmm. to just enjoy football for being football and enjoy it for being a game and mm-hmm. enjoy the halftime show. And yeah, come together as a community. I think it could be great.
You're one of the best poets in our community and obviously do things in that realm that others don't, but did your music background influence you in that area?
Everything that I do, from the poetry to I'm doing more acting now than poetry, actually, or I should say I'm doing more auditioning. Yeah. But everything that I do is based on the way that we pursued excellence in the band at Southern. Doc would always say we practiced for hours, not time. Mm-hmm. So we never knew when we would leave that practice field. And it was about results. You know, you practice for results, not time. And so I take that with me. I'm just always focusing on results. And if it takes me forever to get it done, then I'm going to push myself that hard. So, yeah, it's thanks to Doc.
Well, the Dancing Dolls have been featured nationally recently, and that was a Isaac Gregg's production, and if there ever yep. was one, no doubt. And both Rohan and Ken Ellis, Ken went to school there, but Rohan said he used to go to Southern to meet girls.
Yeah, that's a big part of why we were all in the band.
Yeah, yeah. And Sarah, you spent, I'm trying to give 4 years, I guess, on yes. the lab school, and then another
mm-hmm. 4 years at
four
LSU.
4 years at LSU.
Four
so
years
eight,
at Southern.
8 years on that campus. Mm-hmm. And in your lifetime, mm-hmm. which isn't even 40 years, you've had a lot of change. We've had a lot of change.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But I think from my perspective, I really appreciate the magnification or the highlighting of diversity of this community and the fact that we're bringing everyone together, and Tiger Stadium will reflect the entire community of Baton Rouge. I'm just grateful for that, and I think we're all going to have a lot mm-hmm. of fun.
Well, a few years ago, I wrote, as I did a few times, about the prospect of an LSU-Southern game, and I thought it should be at Memorial Stadium, which mm-hmm. would be a true neutral site.
Right, right.
Which is a good stadium, by the way, but it only seats 21,000, yeah. so I figured they'd have to charge $1,000 a ticket. But you know what? There would be 21,000 people who would pay.
Oh yeah, they would pay. Yeah,
to go to Memorial Stadium, where Terry Bradshaw's career ended in college in 1969. By the way, his last game was at Memorial Stadium. But Tiger Stadium is one of the great showcases in America, and I know it's a big deal for Southern to come there. And I know they're going to do their best to make it a competitive game, but they just don't have the athletes that LSU does.
Right,
and it's a mismatch. They get a big payday. But I have a feeling that no matter what the score is, people will leave there satisfied.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's rare, because most of these rent-a-win games that LSU has, they're boring. And the stands, I tell you what, they clear out right at halftime. Mm-hmm. This time, no. They're not going to be leaving at halftime.
No,
people
no.
are arriving at halftime.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Do we put too much emphasis on college athletics, though?
I remember after I dropped out of college, I almost said graduate, I was fascinated that adults followed college sports. For a while, I was like, "Oh, we're kids. Why are they worried about what we're doing?" You know. Mm-hmm. And then I came to realize, because I'm not a sports guy, it took me a while, but I came to realize that college sports was very entertaining for people of all ages. And also, you know, it had a huge cultural significance for people living in certain areas. And yeah, it was and legacy, right? Where people graduated, and if they were alumni of that school, was still important to them years after. And so it, from my objective point of view, not being a sports fan at all, not following sports at all, it's fascinating.
Well, Sarah, I know you'll be there tomorrow night, but will you go to any other games this year?
I would like to. I you know, I have fond memories of LSU football games.
So you went when you were a student.
I definitely went when I was a student because, you know, we had the national championship in 03 and then again, I think, was it 07. Yeah. So, yeah, those, you know, those are my classmates and friends who were out there on the field, and hopefully some of them will be back today or for some of the games to share in the celebration. But, yeah, I enjoyed spending time game day.
Well, there is a game against Alabama first Saturday in November at Tiger Stadium. I think they'll get a pretty big crowd for that.
Yeah.
LSU has four modern-day national titles, 1958, 2003, 2007, and 2019. Southern has nine black college football championships, and in 03, they both won.
Yeah.
They had a joint parade, if I remember right.
Yeah, that was a great year.
And Nick Saban, of course, was the coach. I think Pete Richardson was still at Southern University, but little did we know that Nick would start winning titles in another place. But LSU fans, many of them, this is their life.
Mm-hmm. I
mean, this is as good as it gets. They live all year to be at that stadium eight times a year or seven as it is this year. And it's something, part of it is great, part of it not so great. I'm sure part of it's they're living vicariously through these athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's what we do with the arts, though, right?
I guess so.
I think sports is entertainment, and you know those athletes are also in a sense artists in that, you know, they're playing for the entertainment of people, and so I think that, you know, it's an escape for a lot of people.
Well, our community has had some challenges, but this is a great event, and it brings people of all kinds together.
Yeah.
And for that, we can be thankful, and it's happening at Tiger Stadium, and let's hope it happens again and again and again.
Yes.
And I'll know who I spent the eve of the game with, Ken Ellis, Rohan Davies, Sarah Broom,
and I have to add, Jim, they can't see it, but that beautiful blue suit you got on.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I came here in my T-shirt, I'm the underdressed one in the studio today.
We're definitely representing the universities here. We got all the right colors, right?
Oh, yeah.
I stayed neutral. I tried to pick a color that they shared. So
she's in gold, which I think, and it's kind of a gold that could be a Southern gold too.
I love both schools. Genuinely.
We should celebrate it. The only community in the world with two land-grant universities in the same city is Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Wow.
And they converge on the field tomorrow night at 6:39. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Chancellor. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We turn the page, and in the last quarter hour, we are privileged to be joined by Tova Friedman, a remarkable lady, if there ever was one. She's now 84 years old, lives in New Jersey, and is one of the youngest survivors of Auschwitz. And she has written about her life in The Daughter of Auschwitz, My Story of Resilience, Survival, and Hope. She's one of the youngest people to emerge from the prison camp after surviving liquidation of the Jewish ghetto in central Poland, where she lived as a toddler. Tova was four when she and her parents were sent to a Nazi labor camp, almost six when she and her mother were forced into a packed cattle truck and sent to Auschwitz II, and her father was transported to Dachau. And good morning to you, Tova.
Good morning.
All these years later, Tova, I suspect this is a searing experience and somewhat difficult to talk about.
Yes and no. It is difficult. I have been talking about it a lot since my children were in high school. But writing is a completely different process because I had to be very still and go back into my memories, my deepest memories. That was very hard, at times very hard, yes.
And at times it's hard to read. For example, 1945, yes. Nazi killing squads are taking out people, and you and your mother survive by hiding among the corpses. As difficult as that is, can you tell us what you recall about that experience?
That I recall almost in detail because I was almost six and a half. My mother took me out somehow. I don't even know how she did it, out of the children's barrack. And we went to a infirmary for women, where she walked around touching all the dead bodies, all the corpses. They're all women, to see which is still, which one she will choose. And she chose one of a young woman. They were still warm. She must have died very recently. And she had me climb in and manipulate my body in such a way where I was breathing into the mattress. And she put, I remember where she put my feet and my arms so that nothing would be seen under the blanket except the face and hands of the corpse, of the dead person. Mm-mm-mm. And she told me to not to breathe, or to breathe very shallowly so that the blanket doesn't move. Because she did anticipate them coming into the infirmary and just looking for who is still alive and shooting them. Because the motto was, leave no witnesses. And they were just about leaving Auschwitz because the Allies were on their way.
Did you think you were going to die?
I didn't even know. I knew, I'll tell you what, I have not seen my mother for a very long time. And I knew I was safe because she was the one who hit me. And I didn't know what would happen. I just knew one thing, that I have to behave in a way that I'll have the best chance to survive. And that means to breathe as little as possible. I remember that, trying to keep my breath. So it should be just a little bit, just enough, but not the regular breathing. I had to concentrate on that.
Well, Tova is one of only a handful of Jews to have entered a gas chamber and lived to tell the tale. What happened to your mother and father?
Well, I and my mother survived because she had apparently hidden with another corpse. So we survived in Auschwitz, and my father, who was in Dachau, miraculously survived also and joined us in Poland, where we returned to our hometown. Tomaszów Mazowiecki, to see who came back from the dead, you know, who came back from the inferno. And my father came about a year later or so.
The book is The Daughter of Auschwitz, and if there is a searing book for this year, it is this. And Tova is telling a story that only a few people in the world could have told, and now she is 84 years old. She was 6 when all this was going on, earlier, of course, when her family was first taken away. And it is, unfortunately, an example of man's inhumanity to man. And it is unfathomable that people could do this, but they did it. And as Gus Weil, my dear friend and mentor, said, in the most civilized country in the world, at least it was thought to be at the time, how did it happen? How could this have happened, Tova?
You know, that's exactly what has been really torturing me. Not so much just that I went through this, but how did the world and humanity allow to have 1.5 million Jewish children murdered, gassed, starved to death, only because they were Jewish? And then the 6 million people were just, you know, I would smell gas. I would smell the burning of flesh every day. That was our atmosphere. In the beginning, when I smelled it for the first time, when I got off the train, I said, "Mom, what is that smell?" And she said, "It's the burning of bodies." And then, of course, you get used to it, by the way. Yes, it's hard to fathom what we do to each other, and we somehow have to stop it.
Well, and to show how we're talking 77 years since the war ended.
Yes.
In that time, Germany has become a great ally of the United States, and Russia is, of course, our chief enemy, and you were actually liberated by Russians, weren't you?
Exactly. That's the irony of life. We're liberated by Russians, and within a few weeks, they behaved in such a terrible way to us that we had to leave as soon as possible. Auschwitz. First, they fed us, and then they became extraordinarily abusive.
When you went back home to Poland, how was it there? What was that experience like, Toby?
Oh, it was terrible. When we arrived, I remember I and my mother were walking, just holding hands, wondering what are we going to do. We were all just the two of us because nothing was organized yet. And a neighbor that my mother knew was coming towards us. My mother was so delighted. She said, "Look, this is such and such." The woman passed us and looked at us and said, "What are you doing here? We thought that Hitler killed you all." There was the first welcome. And then I couldn't go to school because the kids were just so abusive and mean that I refused to go into classes.
And why were they abusive to you?
Well, they kept saying, "You killed Jesus." And I said, "I killed Jesus? I don't know who that is. Who did I kill?" All I knew that we were being killed. I certainly didn't do any harm to anybody. It was like a different nightmare. Mm-hmm. Different because I felt safer. Because then my both parents were there. But it was a terrible time for me as a child, a terrible time. And I just refused to go to school.
Well, and Jesus, of course, was Jewish. But Tova,
yes,
you've kept your spirit. You're such a buoyant person.
Thank you.
And, you know, we all respond to these kinds of things differently. And you were able, in your own way, not to forget it, but to get past it. How did you do it?
Well, I guess I was married to somebody I loved. That helps a lot. I had four children. I was a great student, so I got a number of degrees. In other words, I became that which Hitler thought I would never be. I bore children when I was supposed to have been killed and have no continuity. So life was very good to me to allow me to do all that. And I have now eight grandchildren. The continuity has helped me get over some of the trauma and also sharing it with other people. And I'm a therapist. So all this together, being able to help others, telling my story, the telling of a story is very freeing. That's why I'm so grateful about the book and to people like you who are helping spread this kind of education and knowledge that maybe people will realize they have to stop. They have to stop the anger and the bitterness and the hatred that many people feel towards people that are strangers to them.
Publishers Weekly puts it this way, enriched by Friedman's earnest reckonings with her trauma and hard-won sense of optimism, this is a poignant testimony to survival and faith. The book is The Daughter of Auschwitz, My Story of Resilience, Survival, and Hope from Tova Friedman. Tova, God bless you. Thank you for visiting with us.
Thank you so much.
You keep going. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Until Monday, for Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.